Welcome to the Wampa's Lair Podcast. Deep in the bowels of the frozen ice caverns of Hoth, our hosts, Carl Eclair and Jason Hunt, discuss all things Star Wars. So join the conversation and hang out here in the Wampa's Lair. Hey everybody, and welcome back to another exciting, bopping and jamming episode of the Wampa's Lair Podcast. This is episode number 207. Thank the Larians, this podcast is going to be so good. I am, as always, one of your hosts, Jason Hunt, and with me, the Chirrut to my Chirrut, because we both love Chirrut, and he hasn't even been premiered yet, we have Carl Eclair.
The Force is strong. Take hold of this moment. He doesn't really have much else, but yeah.
Not really.
We're huge fans of Chirrut already.
We are.
How can you not be?
I mean, and I didn't want to, like, have, you know, the Chirrut to my Baze Malbus or the Baze Malbus to my Chirrut, because, you know, we both love Chirrut so much, and it would be very disheartening for the other to not be Chirrut. So I had to just make us both Chirrut.
I mean, I like it. I know, did you remember they did that event this past weekend on Galaxy of Heroes to try to get Chirrut? I didn't even get close to it. Did you? Did you even
play? I think I got 10 or 20 shards.
I got 20 shards.
Yeah, I think that's where I was at.
But it was so annoying. Okay, if any of you play Galaxy of Heroes, I think this is one of the best Star Wars games, period. Not even just like app game or anything. I don't play Battlefront anymore. I'd rather play Galaxy of Heroes. And it's a free game. It's amazing.
Yes.
But they had
just released Starships.
Yeah. Now there's Starships too. It's so good. But they had an event over the weekend where you could try to get a Chirrut character, and hopefully they'll give us another opportunity as Rogue One gets closer, because I didn't get super close.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure they will.
I'm sure they will too. But anyway,
they had that event for the Shore Trooper.
That's right.
And then he became available in like all the different packs and stuff. And I have him now. So
I still don't have him. But anyway, we'll talk Galaxy of Heroes some other time. But yeah. This episode is all about you guys, our Larians. This is coming out the day before Thanksgiving. Obviously, normally we do Thursday releases of the show, but we wanted to give this to you guys a day early in case you're doing any holiday travels. And I myself am doing some holiday travels, so I had to get it out today. But
exactly.
But I'm really excited to tackle all your great questions that you guys wrote in for us. And like we said, this episode is all about you guys. And we still have like a ton of questions left over from, well, not a ton, we still have a few left over from our 200th episode, so we're going to go after those first. But before we get into anything or into our matchup, we want to give another shout out to one of our patrons for helping to support the Wampa's Lair podcast, and this time it's my pleasure to give a big Larian thank you to my friend Tom Babcock. He's been on the show as in Tales of the Larians. This is a good friend of mine from undergrad. Went to college together. So really happy that Tom took the time to contribute to the show, both with his own time and talent by coming on for Tales, but also donating to help support the Patreon page as well. And like we said, all the money we're bringing in this month is going to go towards a charity, which I'll recap at the end of the episode so that we can get into the fun now.
Yes. We have a matchup of the super cool looking do-nothings.
The super cool do-nothings, I like it.
Boba Fett versus Captain Phasma. And Carl, we had a metric ton of responses. There was 26 responses.
Holy
by
crap.
My last count.
Wow. That's awesome.
Yeah, I thought so. So since there are so many responses, I'm going to read a couple of them, but I will make sure everyone's name and vote gets mentioned. So here we go. On Facebook, Timothy Dillon starts us off. He says, right now, I'd definitely say Boba Fett. He's one of the most feared and skilled bounty hunters in the galaxy, while Phasma is just an Imperial soldier. She's likely a very competent one, the events of The Force Awakens notwithstanding. but Fett just operates on an entirely different level. After all, Darth Vader didn't send Imperial troops after the Falcon. He sent bounty hunters, including Fett. Travis Magruder gives it to Boba Fett. Matt Gulledge, also to Boba Fett. Neil Lowry, Phasma, girl power gets the edge. Josiah Krantz, neither one does anything. Both die via random accident. History forgets they both existed. So that's a draw. Damian Krasinski gives it to Phasma. Jeffrey Fishbach, Phasma. Jeffrey Beaumont, Boba Fett. Joey Letson, Boba Fett. And of course, he mentioned Boba's face off against Luke Skywalker and Ben's hut in the comics for you, Carl.
Yeah, stupid. Aren't I so open-minded? But I did comment totally. Back to him. The best thing about that comic line, I mean, I've been out of it for a while, but I liked that series where we do learn that Boba Fett is the one who finds out who Luke is, though, right? So he's the one who's going to tell Vader it's Luke's, like, the guy's name, and that's going to connect the dots for Vader to realize it's his son.
Right.
So I really like that, and I think it makes a stronger appearance for Vader and Fett on screen for Empire. I think Vader has like a trust now in Fett, and Fett kind of knows one of Vader's dirty secrets too. So there's kind of, I think I liked what that did for the relationship of those two characters, and it makes me enjoy their relationship more in Empire now. Not that they're good friends or anything, but it's just really cool because I think it shows why Vader put so much value in Boba Fett, and also why Boba Fett is so darn confident with Vader. I think it's one, because that's just who Boba Fett is, but secondly, he's got some dirty info on Vader, which is kind of cool. So I did like that. I just thought the fight thing was kind of stupid and kind of pathetic that Boba Fett couldn't kill him. So
couldn't kill a blind Luke Skywalker.
Yeah, that's pathetic.
All right, moving back to our responses. Kyle Avery says Boa. Stephen Jones, Fett. Paul Gann says, I'm going with Boba. His heritage alone gives him the edge. Just look at his amazing brother, Rex. Kyle Taylor gives it to Boba Fett. Brian Bailey, Phasma. Gwendolyn Christie fought a bear in Game of Thrones. A bear. She doesn't need any of the mystique of the man with no name. She can prove her might with her sword. Matt McCandless says Boba Fett. Bordari MacArthur, Phasma. Ian Statsny, Phasma. Philip Liebold, and I love this response, he says, Phasma and Boba Fett are so distracted by taking selfies that they bump into each other. This accidentally ignites Boba Fett's rocket pack and sends him zooming out of control into the sky. Phasma loses her balance and falls into a trash chute. It's a draw. Our buddy Jazz gives it to Boba. David Furr also gives it to Boba Fett. Patrick Kotef, Boba Fett. Theron Allman, Boba Fett. On Twitter, we got a couple of responses. @R2SW gives it to Boba. @DavePisani75, Boba Fett all day long. Bradley W. Hall gives it to Boba. And we have an email response from Patrick, who also gives it to Boba Fett, which gives us a final Larian tally of 18 for Boba Fett, 6 for Captain Phasma, and 2 ties. Mm-hmm. What say you, Carl LeClaire?
Well, you know, I was thinking about this I kind of tried to reshape how I think about our matchups for this particular one because, you know, going with like, yeah, Boba Fett's got all these great gadgets and blah, blah, blah. So that always is going to give him an edge. But that's not really combat skill. That's cheating. So when it comes to like combat skill, I give it to Phasma, and I give it to Phasma by a long shot. Captain, I mean, again, look at the First Order. Look at those stormtroopers compared to the stormtroopers in the original trilogy. These are troopers who are indoctrinated from birth. They're, you know, to me, they're kind of like Sparta, right? Like they're raised to do combat. And while Boba Fett certainly was raised to be a bounty hunter, bounty hunting and combat are very different things. You know, you can do cheap things. It's about cunning. So, you know, like, yeah, Boba might get the slip on her in a way, but when it comes to straight combat skills, if this was an actual fight and you kind of strip down some of Boba Fett's extra arsenal and gadgetry, Phasma wins this hands down. So I give it to Captain Phasma, hands down.
I think I'm going to agree with you on that. Hey. You have swayed my vote. I didn't really know where I was going with this until you started talking. Thank you, Carl.
Good for something.
But yeah, you know, not only does she have the height advantage, but, you know, with her stormtroopers being more along the lines of what we saw with the clone troopers in the Clone Wars, rather than the stormtroopers we saw in the original trilogy, and the fact that all of her stormtroopers like are scared of her.
Mm-hmm.
Not only that, but she's got that shiny armor, which the sunlight glints off of, and it gets in your eyes, and she can take advantage of that. So, but that gives us a final tally here of 18 for Boba Fett, 8 for Captain Phasma, and 2 ties. So,
all right, I like that. The battle of the do nothings.
Yes,
I think we're gonna
the battle of super cool do nothings.
Yes, I think we're gonna see Phasma do some cool stuff in Episode 8, though.
I think so.
You know,
I think so. They've got to really start upping the tension between her and Finn, since he's the traitor,
yeah,
and was part of her squadron, and now he's defected, and he was the one that, you know, got the jump on her with Han and Chewie on Starkiller Base. So there's got to be a vendetta between those two now.
Because
Poe's, you know, Poe can take on Hux, you know, from his X-Wing in Hux's Star Destroyer. Rey's obviously primary opponent is going to be Kylo Ren. So we got to give Finn a primary opponent. It's got to be Phasma.
Yeah. Well, I think, again, maybe that's what, you know, a lot of folks were like, oh, I should, you know, when he's fighting with the lightsaber on Takadana, right? Everybody was like, oh, I wish that was, you know, that should have been Phasma. But we knew how that was going to end. Like, we knew Finn was going to lose the fight, and he had to be saved by a bowcaster. So that would have killed Phasma outright.
Right.
So I think we'll see her doing some combat, though, in the next movie.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree.
So.
All right.
Hey, you want to do some questions?
Yeah, I think we should.
We got many of them, and they're all good. So we're going to kick this off, like I said, going back to... So we have a few leftovers from episode 200. Apologize that we're just getting to these now. But we appreciate your patience. Yes. So we're going to start with Eliezer. Eliezer Rodriguez writes in with... He says, I have two questions. What do you guys think Vader meant when he said to Obi-Wan in episode 4, when I left you, I was but the learner. Now I am the master. I thought it was Obi-Wan who left Vader to die on Mustafar. So... Good question. Jason, what do you think that line means for Vader? When I left you, I was but the learner. Now I am the master. Ole master of evil, Darth.
Ole master of evil, Darth. all right. I think he's referring more to when he left the Order and accepted the mantle of Sith rather than the specific last time they saw each other. When he accepts the mantle of Darth Vader there in Palpatine's office, he has disavowed the Jedi Order and pledged himself, as he says, to Palpatine and his teachings. And so he was Obi-Wan's learner. Yes, he was a Jedi Knight. He wasn't his Padawan anymore. But Obi-Wan was still very much a mentor figure to him, as we saw throughout the Clone Wars. You know, yes, they were friends, but Obi-Wan also counseled and mentored Anakin throughout the series. And so now Vader likes to think that his eyes have been opened and he's, you know, overcome some of the clouds that the Jedi Order put over him, you know, that sort of thing. So he's the master now. He's a Sith Lord, you know, a Sith Lord.
Sith Lord. Yes. And the one we've been looking for. Are you sure?
Are you sure?
Absolutely. Then our worst fears have been realized.
We must move quickly if the Jedi Order is to survive.
You're going to need my help with this Ursa. Whatever. I screwed it.
That's not a scene I'd necessarily memorized. No. But yeah, I think that's my opinion on that one anyways.
Yeah, I'm of the same opinion. I was going to say the same thing. You know, I think we kind of talked about this scene in our last episode. And I think it's Vader's kind of, showing of how in command of things he is now, right? He wants to make it very clear that he's in control of this situation. He is more powerful than Obi-Wan. And it, like you said, Jason, I think for him, when he left, it was, you know, in the Chancellor's, you know, private chambers there when he kind of betrayed the order. So that's, I think, what he's referring to when I left you. He was still, in a way, you know, under Obi-Wan's tutelage. So I think that's what that means.
Yeah, totally.
But Eleazar goes on to say, I think that Snoke could be related to the Skywalkers. Perhaps Snoke can be Shmi's father. And she ran away with Anakin because she was afraid he might follow in his dark side footsteps. What do you guys think?
Do you want to tackle that one first?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think so. I think, again, Snoke is he's a nobody. He's in the sense of, like, he's not someone we've seen before. I don't think he's Plagueis. I don't think he's Vader resurrected or the Emperor resurrected. He's just some new player in the game. You know, he might have ties to Palpatine, you know, as one of his advisors or something of that nature. But I don't think he is going to have certainly not any familial relations. And even if he was Anakin or Shmi's father, oh man, that dude would be super old. So,
yeah.
I mean, granted, he does look old, but
he also looks like he's been messed up by some sort of accident. So.
Right. So, you know, I think that's something we're still all like super curious about is who is Snoke. And I'm sure it's going to be, he's going to have some level of backstory that'll be intriguing to us as Star Wars fans, but I don't think it's going to be something so familial. Like, he's not going to have any sort of, you know, relations to our main characters.
No, I don't think so. Especially because Snoke is, he's the top dog in the First Order, as far as we know. You know, this is his First Order. Mm-hmm. Shmi was a slave. She was sold to Gardola the Hutt. And then, you know, they were, you know, bet on the pod races and lost to Watto. You know, she was a slave. And someone like that, even if she was running from, you know, Snoke's dark side tendencies, I don't think she would end up as a slave on a backworld Tatooine. You know, she probably would hide out in some very nondescript middle-class suburb and try and live out her life unassuming and unnoticed. So,
yeah. So, and then he goes on to ask, finally, why do they still have dark side users in Episode 7? When Anakin the Chosen One brought balance to the Force by getting rid of the dark side, not just the Sith.
I think being, you know, the Chosen One bringing balance to the Force, as we have seen through, you know, both the films and Clone Wars, is interpreted many different ways. You know, it's interpreted strictly by the Jedi as, you know, eliminating the Sith. By the father on Mortis, it's Anakin was supposed to stay there and keep the balance between the son and the daughter. You know, there's all these different interpretations of that prophecy. It's probably somewhere more in the gray area. Anakin saved the, you know, the Jedi Order by eliminating the Sith there. And I think that bringing the light back into a place of prominence brought balance back to the Force, where the Sith had kept it stomped out for, you know, a couple of decades under Palpatine's rule. And I think that's more bringing balance to the Force. And while at this point it looks like the Sith are destroyed, as we're seeing in a lot of other sources, you know, Rogue One, Rebels, even Clone Wars, there's all sorts of Force users out there that don't necessarily subscribe to either the Jedi or Sith way of doing things. So the dark side and the light side of the Force are two very vast canvases that can be painted any number of ways. So while the Sith, I think, are destroyed, the dark side doesn't necessarily mean that it's gone, because it preys off of, you know, baser instincts and, you know, dreams of power in people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, I mean, again, I'll just kind of second what you said. I don't have much to add, but yeah, I think, you know, for the Jedi specifically, and in the story of Star Wars, you know, I mean, obviously, we have that idea of the balance has been expanded in Clone Wars, it's been expanded in literature, but insofar as the movies go, it's a Jedi prophecy, you know, and not that it's can only be interpreted their way, but they're the ones who interpret it for us, the viewers, and for them, the balance means destruction of the Sith, and that's what Anakin did. He destroyed the Sith by killing Palpatine at the end of Return of the Jedi. The dark side is, it's kind of a forever thing. You know, there is always going to be a light side and a dark side. Mm-hmm. So I think that's, you know, that's kind of what happened here, you know, and even the beginning of Force Awakens, when Lor San Tekka says, you know, the First Order rose from the dark side, you know. So the dark side is still existent. But the particularity of the Order of the Sith is gone. And I think that's awesome that, you know, we do have a new dark side threat in Force Awakens, but it's so good that it's not Sith. You know, I think that would have really defeated the story of the original trilogy. So it's very important that it's not Sith. And, you know, who knows if you can ever fully eradicate the dark side.
Right.
So, but yeah, so that's what I think.
Yeah. Should we move on to the next question?
Let's do it. That took a long time to do one question. Got a lot to go.
let's try and get set through some of these. Jessica Baker writes in, here's my question. If Luke can get a new hand, if Anakin can get essentially a new body, if Maul can have the bottom half of his body replaced by a robot after falling down a bottomless pit, why can't Kanan get his eyesight back?
Well, you know, Jessica, I think this is probably meant to be a funny question to some degree, because, yeah, that's a good point. You know, if that all those things can happen, there's no reason Kanan probably can't see again. But I think it's more the purpose of story. It's to show that Kanan is able to, you know, your eyes can deceive you. Don't trust them. You know, it's one of the very first instructions we heard about the Force in A New Hope. So I think the reason Kanan doesn't just get it, you know, surgically restored is because, again, he probably could. But I think he chooses not to, because, again, when we pick up in season 3, Kanan, remember, he's very depressed. He's down and out. He's feeling a tremendous amount of guilt. So I don't think, to some degree, maybe he doesn't even feel like he deserves that. But more than that, it's the purpose of the story that Kanan the Force can be something beyond simple eyesight. So I think it's just really cool, because it ties back into that very first lesson from Star Wars about how Luke can fight, you know, that little probe on the Millennium Falcon without, you know, with the blast shield down. So for Kanan to be able to move on and still find a way of seeing, it says more about his relationship with the Force and more about his character.
Yeah. And I agree. Story-wise, Carl, you're right on. But if you want a more practical in-world explanation, I've got one for you.
Okay.
Replacing limbs, you know, like what Luke gets, it's probably a fairly simple procedure at this point, not too expensive. When Anakin gets a new body, he had the entire, you know, Imperial Medical Center at his, you know, at Palpatine's disposal to fix him back up. You know, money was no object. Rebel Alliance at this point barely, you know, is able to have enough fuel for each mission that they go on. They don't have the money to get any of these sort of, you know, cybernetic eye replacements if they wanted to do that. It's probably much more expensive and much more dangerous operation because of the optic nerves involved. So if you want a practical in-world answer, the rebels just don't have the funds or the skill set to give him his eyesight back.
Sorry, Kanan. Too expensive.
Yep.
So thanks for the question, Jessica. Let's move on. And Roger Tavernier. Sorry, Roger. I probably just butchered your last name. He says, I'm sure you guys will make it to 205. Luckily, we did. Yes. He says, when did Obi-Wan find out that Darth Vader survived their duel? Maybe Rebels will shed some light on it.
It's entirely possible.
Well, so if you've ever read Dark Lord, The Rise of Darth Vader by James Luceno, which came out probably within a year of Revenge of the Sith, it's meant to be kind of an immediate sequel to Revenge of the Sith. It takes place, I think, 1 month after the events of Revenge of the Sith. And it's a lot about how Vader's struggling to adapt his new suit. So heads up, spoiler alert coming up. The end of the novel, it kind of ends with this epilogue with Obi-Wan on Tatooine. And he's in a bar and he overhears on the holonet news about this new enforcer for the Emperor named Darth Vader. So that's where he learns about it. And it totally freaks him out. And he sees this Darth Vader. But he also knows who Darth Vader is. So according to that novel, which again is now Legends, that's how it happens.
Yeah.
But again, that doesn't have to be anymore because it's a legend story. I think it can easily be canon, but I wouldn't be surprised if they give us something in canon, in our new canon, to explain it. But that's, at least in the old canon, that's how Obi-Wan found out.
I feel like in the new canon, Qui-Gon probably tells Obi-Wan.
Yeah, that's a good point.
While they're communing.
Right.
Because Qui-Gon was very in touch with Anakin.
Anakin!
But yeah, even beyond, beyond his death, he was, in touch with the path Anakin was going down. So I feel like Qui-Gon probably tells Obi-Wan during one of their communes. I need to go back and check out some of the Obi-Wan stories in the Star Wars comic line, Marvel comic line, and see if that's mentioned anywhere in any of those.
I don't think
it's mentioned, but
I actually, even though I haven't been keeping up, I have been reading those just because those are really good, and I think they're done with them. But in the ones that we've had, he has not learned that information.
Right.
So, but again, it could happen. We don't know. Time will tell.
Time will tell. All right. Let's move on to the next one from at Bradley W. Hall. For episode 200, my question would be, what do you think the saddest moment in hashtag Star Wars is? Hashtag Larian for life.
That's my new favorite hashtag.
Yes.
Well, because this is the Wampa's Lair, I have one and an honorable mention. I have a feeling we might share the same one, Jason.
Okay.
Which is the end of Revenge of the Sith would be my honorable mention. That, again, we love talking the Banks of Mustafar scene.
Yes.
You were the chosen one.
Who said that you would destroy the Sith, not join them? Bring balance to the Force. Not leave it in darkness.
I hate you.
You are my brother, Anakin. I loved you.
That scene is so freaking perfect.
It is.
And it's so heartbreaking. It's the first time in a Star Wars movie that I teared up ever. It's just so beautiful, and it's so heartbreaking. I mean, it's the death of these two great friends.
Yeah.
And, also in a way, the death of everything Anakin ever had and Obi-Wan. They both are losing everything here.
Yeah.
So that is, to me, an honor. That's a very close second now to the death of Han Solo. I have never cried like that to anything that's not real in my life. I've cried hard in life to true tragedies, but that is the most non-real life tragedy I've ever bawled at. I saw that movie 11 times in the theaters. I think I cried at least 6 or 7 of them too. And sometimes still when I watch it on Blu-ray, if I'm alone and I'm in the right mood, it'll still tear me up. I love Han Solo. So watching his death, then again, that scene is so perfect. It's just so sad because it's one, the death of one of our most beloved heroes. And also it's the hands of his son. you know, and Han is trying there to break through, and he almost does, and Kylo just really wants to be a bad boy for some reason, which, again, I think we'll continue to get more of that fleshed out moving forward. So, but what about you, Jason? I have a feeling you probably will.
It's really hard for me to pick the saddest moment because a lot of these different things hit me differently at different times. You know, sometimes it'll be the Banks of Mustafar scene. Sometimes it's Anakin saying goodbye to his mom in The Phantom Menace.
Oh, yeah, that's a heartstring puller.
Oh, it. And other times, you know, or Anakin, you know, with his mom dying in his arms before she can finish saying, I love you, you know, that's, you know, Han's death is sad, but I've not been attached to Han as much as most people, so it doesn't hit me quite as hard. Although I would think one of the saddest moments in Star Wars for me right now is that couple second shot towards the very end of The Force Awakens after the battle is all over, and we get Chewie sitting by himself in a corner in the rebel base, in the resistance base, you know, mourning the loss of his friend.
Because
He's all by himself.
Yeah.
So I can't pick the saddest because they all hit me differently at different times. But those are just a couple of them that, you know, have been the saddest for me in the past.
Yeah. So Jason took a question for one thing and turned it into a top five list. So
pretty much, yeah.
But yeah, thanks.
One that I can't organize in any actual order.
But yeah, thank you, Bradley. That's a really good question because there's certainly several things to choose from in these films. But we have a hunk of a question here from Red Kenobi. And again, I'm not going to read through everything he sent to us because there's a lot of really neat stuff in here. I'm just basically going to read his direct questions for the purpose of time on the show. But he did say, I really missed the original intro for your show. The new one is nice, but the old one was better. Could you guys alternate between the two? I really like our newest one. Even my girlfriend said she really liked parts of the first one more too. So we can definitely alternate. Let's move on. He says, how would you feel if Thrawn was the one to get rid of the Ghost Crew and all of Phoenix Squadron for that matter? He says, I think Rebels will only go 4 seasons and that's why Filoni isn't leading the show on a daily basis, because the story for the end of the show is already written and planned. He's probably planning the next show to come after Rebels here. And then he gives us a bunch of really great predictions for all the characters. I Red Kenobi, I hope you are right that he is planning the next series, which to me ideally will take place between Return of the Jedi and Force Awakens.
Yes.
And will be about the main characters, not randos. time will tell. But anyway, to the question itself.
Not Rando Calrissian, Lando's, you know, long lost brother.
Yeah, exactly. And like, you know, the Iron Brigade off of Rebels. Oh God. So anyway, to the question, how would you feel if Thrawn was the one to basically eradicate the ghost and its crew? How would you feel about that, Jason?
It would be shocking to me because while Thrawn is definitely the most intimidating villain that the Rebels crew has faced so far, to have him, I can't see all of them getting wiped out. I feel like there's a story beyond A New Hope for at least some of the Ghost Crew characters. So if he's the one to get rid of the Ghost Crew and all of Phoenix Squadron and, Captain Sato's rebel cell there, it would surprise me. I feel like there's going to be a way that you know, Thrawn gets a major victory, but our crew manages to slip out. I feel like that's a more likely scenario. But it would be, it would definitely cement Thrawn's place as one of the most effective Imperial villains of all time, if that were the case. So, but it would shock me. It would surprise me if he was the one to just get rid of the crew.
Sorry, Jason. I'm distracting Jason with my Star Wars bendoms.
Yes.
But I think you're definitely onto that there, Jason. You know, and I will say, you know, Red Kenobi, he took the time to write these really detailed analysis of what he thinks is going to happen, you know, to the Ghost crew. And even he doesn't think that Thrawn will literally kill all of them.
Mm-hmm.
But I think Thrawn needs to do something kind of badass, right? You know,
yeah.
We have all this pre-knowledge of Thrawn, unless you're like a new like Star Wars fan, right? And you haven't read the Hand of Thrawn trilogy. Certainly, he's kind of a new person to you. But to those of us, you know, who are steeped in the old canon, we all know who Thrawn is, and they've obviously brought. Thrawn is the same character he was in the books. It's just at a different time period. You know, he's that master tactician. He hasn't really done anything yet, if you think about it. You know, he's got that cool voice. You can tell he's smart. And, you know, they brought in a little bit of that art, you know, the fact that he analyzes culture's art and learns about them through that. But we haven't really seen him do anything. You know, everything he's... All the little victories the rebels are having, it seems like he knew those, right? So that, which makes it somewhat scary, because it's like, okay, he was expecting that, he wants that mm-hmm. to happen. He's obviously got the wheels in motion, and he's going to do something.
Yes,
I think it would be. I don't know if he has to kill anyone. I don't know that he himself will be directly responsible for the death of any of them. The only one I could see maybe being directly responsible, you know, dying directly because of Thrawn is Rex. Because I think he's kind of one of the throwaway crew members, not throwaway in the sense that we don't like him, but he's not one of the original Ghost crew. I could see him going out, but I don't see like Hera or, Kanan or Ezra, you know? But I think he needs to do something. And I like, you know, Red Kenobi, you also bring in the Phoenix Squadron question. I could see him eradicating Phoenix Squadron or taking out Captain Sato.
Yeah, you know,
that little exchange between Captain Sato and Grand Admiral Thrawn at the end of the most recent episode of Rebels, right?
Yes.
There is kind of a mind game there. So I could see Thrawn wiping them out.
I was just about to say that. I think if anybody right now who has, you know, the targeting target on their back from Thrawn to be eliminated is Commander Sato. And I think he's the most likely candidate at this point. I can totally see him going out in a blaze of glory, you know, while Thrawn just stands there, you know, with that very evil little smirk on his face.
Yeah. Yeah, I could too.
Going, so. Yes, all this is going according to plan.
Right. And if you think about it too, I mean, they brought Thrawn in for the bigger picture. And that's the bigger picture. You know, Sato and his fleet is a lot more of a threat than the crew of the Ghost. I mean, the crew of the Ghost, their demise will be at the hands of Vader or potentially Darth Maul. I don't know that Grand Admiral Thrawn will be directly responsible for any of their deaths.
And I'm not convinced yet that any of them will die. So, at least not in the show. You know, it
Well, think about it. I mean, even look at look at Clone Wars.
Mm-hmm.
The biggest character we got there, Ahsoka. They didn't kill her. You know,
exactly.
Rex. They didn't kill him. You know, so it's not, you know, it's not guaranteed that these characters will die. I do think something has to happen in Kanan and Ezra. I think they need to go away because of their, you know, their force use and potential as Jedi. I think that's really important that they clear the way for Luke. But I don't think Hera or Sabine, Zeb, they don't necessarily have to die.
And they've all got places to go back to.
Exactly.
So.
But again, you know, and I do agree with Red Kenobi that there'll only be four seasons. I, you know, some people think that this could potentially be the last season. I'm pretty sure we'll get one more season, but yeah. I don't see it going past season four. And I honestly don't know that I would want it to, because I was just talking to my friend Greg about this yesterday. You know, the last couple of episodes of Rebels have been just kind of like those, you know, they're the filler episodes is what I call them. You know, we got a lot of those in Clone Wars as well. And it doesn't mean that they're not good. Like, I enjoyed the last two episodes. They were a lot of fun. But, you know, when you've got things like when we know Darth Maul's still out there running around, Darth Vader's still in the picture, you know, what happened to Ahsoka? You know, those bigger questions, that's kind of what we want. And I wouldn't be surprised if they do a mid-season break and we get some heavy, you know, some heavy-duty stuff again. And it looks like the upcoming episode again this weekend is another one of those just kind of fun ones. I like those, but oh man, I'm like chomping at the bit to learn more about what's going on with those bigger pictures.
Yeah. They've got a lot of pans in the fire there, and it's going to be interesting to see what becomes of all of them.
Yeah. So anyway, Red Kenobi, thanks for your questions. I apologize. We didn't go through every little bit of what you kind of threw in there, but hopefully we got the gist of what you were going for. And thanks for the time, especially to write all that out and specifically your predictions about the Rebels characters.
Definitely. I guess it's my turn, right?
It's your turn, Jason.
All right. This question comes from Manga Dolo. I have a show question for you. Do you think us fans could or should petition George Lucas to get back involved in future full-length films? I may just be nostalgic, but I definitely miss him. To me, nothing is ever really canon without George. What do you guys think?
Oh, that's a heavy question.
It's a heavy question.
You know, to the first point about should we or could we petition George Lucas to come back? I think George Lucas has written off the fan community because of how it treated him in light of the prequels. I don't think he hates the Star Wars fan community, certainly not, because the majority of the Star Wars fan community still loves that man. But I think he's done with Star Wars films, and I don't think any petition would bring him back. And I don't think Disney would let him back. You know, I mean, he kind of made that clear in his interview with Charlie Rose, I think is who it was with, you know, when he says, you know, they weren't really keen on me sticking around. Which I get, you know, George is, he's a creative mind. He's a storyteller, and you know, it just wasn't gel well with what Disney wanted to do with the Star Wars franchise. Where was this point made? Yeah, actually Red Kenobi made this point. I didn't read it cause it wasn't a question, but he says, Lucas only made Star Wars movies or Clone Wars because he had a story to tell. It wasn't about money or shareholders. That's a big difference with Disney. I think he's onto something there. And I don't think Disney's only doing it for the money. Certainly not. And they've got a great story team still over at Lucasfilm, you know, with Dave Filoni right at the head of the ship, who, you know, basically is George Lucas's understudy. We won't see George Lucas involved in a feature length film again for Star Wars, at least. But I do totally sympathize with you, Manga Dolo, because I'm so nostalgic for George. Every time I watch Force Awakens now, and I still really like that movie, but I literally just said this to my girlfriend the other day. I was like, Force Awakens is a really good movie. It's a really fun movie. It's not the best Star Wars movie.
No.
Because there's something really missing. It's so clear. And I miss George. I'd love to have him as a story consultant moving forward. I'm okay with him not directing and writing the scripts.
He's definitely more the story ideas man than an actual script writer.
Right. And if you look at the original trilogy, he did a lot of that. I mean, he wrote the entire first script for A New Hope, but he had like four or five friends help him revise it several times. Empire and Jedi, you know, he didn't do a lot of the script writing. He did the story writing. There's a big difference.
Right.
But be that as it may, I think he's done with Star Wars. But I'm totally nostalgic for it too. You know, I miss George a ton. I don't necessarily not consider things canon now because George didn't do them. I get that point. And I think I'm the perfect person to say this because of my own, you know, disputes with some of the things they've done with Rebels, specifically Ezra, is I get it, you know, not necessarily liking what they do, but it's important to remember that George sold it to them and entrusted it to Disney and entrusted it to the storytellers that still are at Lucasfilm. And if we want to have a continuing Star Wars saga, it has to transcend George, and it was going to have to anyway. He's not going to live forever.
Right.
You know, and when, you know, when he passes away, whether he was still in charge of Lucasfilm or not, if we want Star Wars to continue, it's got to transcend him. And I think that it's doing that. And it's, this is the growing pains.
You know?
These are the growing pains. Sorry, I just talked a ton, Jason.
No, it's fine. Could the fans petition? Yes, they could. Should they? I don't think so. George Lucas, while he is forever ingrained in Star Wars and is forever part of what Star Wars is, he's not getting any younger. He wants to retire, and I think we should respect that. You know, let him retire. Let him try and make his, you know, get his Museum of Narrative Art built somewhere. You know, let him move on to other things. You know, they obviously like having him around. He visited the set of Rogue One. I'm sure he'll visit the set of Episode 8.
Maybe.
Well, he
didn't seem to be welcome in Force Awakens set.
Well, I mean, that with the Force Awakens is different.
True.
It's very different because it's the first time they're stepping out on their own and they're trying to establish this new era of Star Wars without him directly involved. And, you know, it's going to be one of those things where they want him to be happy with what they've done. And so I'm sure Kathleen Kennedy calls him every so often, asks his opinions on one thing or another. Dave Filoni has the utmost respect for George Lucas and the way he did things. And so he's now in turn teaching that to, you know, the various animation crews that he's working with there at Lucasfilm. And so George's fingerprints are still there. You know, Kathleen Kennedy is someone that George has worked with for decades before she took over Lucasfilm. They're good friends, and she understands the way he likes things run. And then, of course, as I said, Dave Filoni is basically the new George Lucas when it comes to Star Wars animation. You know, so while George himself isn't involved, there's still people who know him, work with him, respect him, that are there, that understand his methods. And while things may not be always done entirely the way George Lucas would have done them, they're still what we have. It's still the new canon, and some of it is absolutely phenomenal. You know, some of what we've gotten in Rebels is some of the best Star Wars, period. You know, so saying, you know, I can't go that far with you, Manga Dolo, to say that, you know, it's not really canon without George, because he did pass it on to these people. And I have to respect him for that. So I'm going to take what these people create as if it were from George, in a sense. Well, it's going to definitely take, you know, a lot more people to do what George did now than when he was in charge. You know, they still, and while they may want to have their own impact on the saga as well, they still highly respect what he did. I don't think George Lucas needs to get involved again in full-length feature films because the people that are in place are good. And because he's earned his retirement. So I feel like we should just let him have that. So,
yeah. Yeah, but I totally get it. You know, the nostalgia is a heavy, heavy pill to swallow.
It is.
And it's, you know, again, we're going to always miss him, but
yeah,
You know,
and I'm a huge George Lucas apologist. So yeah. More so than, you know, even Carl here. So I get it. I get the love for George, but I think it's time that he's moved on. So we should as well.
Right. Well, even look at it this way, right? These are the dark times into the new canon. You know, we had those original fans had the actual dark times between 1983 and really, you know, I mean, it kind of started to resurge in 1995, 96 with special edition specifically. But, you know, in that period, there was nothing. You know, you had a brief stint of the droids and Ewoks cartoon, but that was it. This is an adjustment period for the Star Wars franchise, but at least we're getting awesome stuff in the adjustment. Right. So we're pretty darn lucky.
Yeah, they're still figuring out how they're doing this because it's the first time that they don't have the training wheels on. So
yeah,
you know, it's going to be a bit wobbly at first, but they'll get it straightened out.
Yeah. So, but yeah, thanks for letting us talk George Manga. We always like talking about good old the Maker.
Yes.
But I believe it's my turn.
Yes.
We got some questions from Patrick Reiner. He says, do you think that after Rogue One comes out, that we will see Rogue One characters in Star Wars Rebels?
Ooh. Yes. I think so. I think it's more likely that we will see Rogue One characters show up in Rebels than Rebels characters showing up in Rogue One. I feel like Saw Gerrera is probably a prime candidate to make an appearance in Rebels, especially with the way that they're going around and trying to connect with all these other Rebel cells. They're going to come across Saw. He's going to do some stuff that's not quite on the up and up the way they'd like it to be done, and then he's going to become his own little entity, I feel. I feel like that's probably a very likely scenario. I do think one or two of the Rogue One characters will make an appearance in Rebels.
Yeah, I'm with you. I don't think it'll be the main characters. Like, I don't think we'll see Jyn Erso or Cassian Andor necessarily, but I could definitely see somebody who certainly connects the animation to the film, Saw Gerrera, and potentially some other background characters, but I don't think we'll get any big main characters. I'd love to see Chirrut, but that's not going to happen, I don't think.
Yeah, I know, right? I don't think Chirrut and Baze are going to show up. I think what we might see is the model of droid that K2SO mustering up in the Empire as well. So,
oh, yeah, for sure. Definitely. But Patrick has a couple more questions. He says, are you guys going to do a journey to Rogue One this year? And if so, are you going to do those for every new movie basically coming out? to answer the question, yeah, we are doing one for the build up to Rogue One, which obviously Patrick probably wrote this question before we made that announcement, but we are doing a Rogue One mini episode build up for the week leading up to the premiere. It is going to be through Patreon this year. And I'll explain why about that towards the end of the episode, but yes, we do plan on doing it and we'll probably do it for all the new films because it's fun.
It is. It's really fun
getting like geared up for it. So,
Yeah. But we'll have, you know, a big Rogue One episode before, you know, right before it comes out for everybody. And we'll have a big Rogue One review episode right after it comes out. So, you know, don't worry if you're not a Patreon supporter, it's not like you'll be forgotten with our Rogue One coverage.
Exactly.
Coming December, it'll be all Rogue One, basically.
Yeah, pretty much. But his last question is just a lot of fun. He says, if you guys could choose a Star Wars character for the Black Series 6 3/4-inch line that has not yet been made, who would it be? Would it be?
Oh, man.
So I'll let you think for a second because I already know exactly who I'd want for the 6-inch series.
Okay, and go for it.
That's Bespin Han. I want Han Solo. Even though it's almost like the same sculpt to a degree as The Force Awakens Han, I really want Empire Strikes Back Han Solo. 3 3/4-inch line, I could kind of care less because I don't buy them. Wow, that sounded like really flippant. Like, it's a good question. I don't tend to buy them just because, again, I don't really have anywhere to put them anymore, so I stick to the 6-inch line. But for 3 3/4-inch, I That's a good question. I'd have to think for a moment, but
I think I've got some answers.
Okay.
For 6-inch, you know, obviously this character's been made many, many times in the 3¾-inch line. For 6-inch, I want Kit Fisto.
Hey, there it is.
And Count Dooku.
Oh yeah, I want a Count Dooku 6-inch too.
I need Count Dooku and Kit Fisto in my 6-inch line. That would be amazing. For a 3¾-inch, I think I'd like a Bendu.
The Bendu. Ooh, I want a 6-inch Embo too.
Ah, there you go.
Because my kitty needs it.
we're just throwing our wish lists out there.
Yeah, for you folks. 3¾-inch. I guess I don't really have anything there. A 6-inch Wampa. Oh, wait, they made one. That's right. I just don't have it. Yeah, I don't have it. I need to get that.
Ooh, for the 3¾-inch, I think I'd like a Jedi Master Dai from the Clone Wars, because I've been using him a lot in Star Wars Galaxy of Heroes, and he's really awesome. Yeah. And I liked his episode in the Clone Wars. Yeah. So
I borrow that character from you all the time.
he's good.
He is pretty good. I'd also like a 6-inch series Anakin and Obi-Wan Clone Wars episode. They did the Kanan kind of more like life action. If they did like Obi-Wan and like part stormtrooper gear and Anakin and his gear from Clone Wars, but like gave them like the Hayden and Ewan faces. Oh, I'd like that.
That'd be cool.
So
yeah, definitely.
Oh, we got to do an episode just on what we want to see in action figures.
Oh man. Yeah. We're going to have to get, that'd be fun to have
I guess I would also
Scott
like
Scott Rifen. We should have Scott Rifen on to talk that.
We should. I'll also need a bigger house.
Yes. maybe a Steve Glosson to talk about that. All right. Let's stop. You know, making our Christmas wish lists for Hasbro, and move on to our next question from Kyle Taylor. Do you think we will ever learn more about Lor San Tekka in the movies, especially? I'm hoping so. What do you think?
I don't think we'll get a lot in the movies, because again, we got a lot of that sort of stuff in all of the films, really. You know, where you kind of get this kind of mysterious character who's important to the story at this specific point in time. But other than that, they kind of just fade away, and then obviously we'll get like a comic series or a novel or something of that nature. I don't know that Lor San Tekka will be. The only person I could see potentially talking about him is Leia with Luke. In episode 8. But I just don't see that happening. But yes, I do think we'll get more info for sure. I mean, there's some info. I'm really behind on the Poe series, but obviously Poe's looking for him in the comic series. He's looking for Lor San Tekka. So we're definitely going to get more about him, specifically to the movies. I don't know how much more we'll get in the movies.
Not sure how much more we'll get in the movies. Maybe a passing line, but I doubt it's going to be much. Since his role was over so quickly. But that being said, I think there is a possibility of him showing up in Rebels, you know, maybe not a possibility nonetheless, where, you know, this younger Lor San Tekka shows up, and, you know, on an adventure, and runs across Kanan and or Ezra as they're both seeking some sort of force thing. I feel like that's a possibility. But in the movies, probably not much.
Yeah. So next question comes from another recent Tales of the Larian member. Neil Lowry, he says, "Hi, Carl and Jason. Love the Wampas Lair. Yeah, I like it too.
It's a pretty good show. It's decent.
It's not bad, you know." he says, "A question: why do you think Star Wars has stayed so popular, coming up to its 40th anniversary?"
Oh man,
I mean, that's a question we've talked about before on the show, and I think all of us Star Wars fans probably occasionally reflect on that. And that's exactly true. It's going to be the 40th anniversary of that movie this coming year.
Yeah.
Which is just crazy. But again, I think it's the mythology of a story with such a huge universe that there is just so much we can do in it. You know, it is literally an ongoing modern myth. And because of that, we can like put ourselves into the story in so many different ways. As we grow, we can grow with this saga. And this saga allows us a certain amount of escape. And I don't think, you know, escapism, not in the unhealthy way of like we're trying to escape reality. That's unhealthy escape. I think for us Star Wars fans, we like to escape into Star Wars because it taps into a part of our own creativity, and it kind of opens us up to doing and being more in the real world. You know, I think that's why for me, Star Wars is as close as a real world religion as you're going to get from a movie. And I mean that in the sense of people, the way they buy into this story and the way they buy into it in their everyday lives is so huge. So again, there are a lot of really fun action movies out there. You know, Harry Potter is right up there. Lord of the Rings, Star Trek, but Star Wars has something above all of those. And I think that's its ability to help us, the viewer, kind of self-transcend. We are able to just kind of find new creative outlets and tap ourselves into this really vibrant, different world that is just so real to us. So that's kind of my answer in a nutshell.
No. The problem is this such a difficult thing to answer, because if you could distill that answer easily, everybody would be doing it. There's something so unique about Star Wars, and it's a combination of right time, right place, right formula, right vision for the story, and the fact that it keeps going in a way that keeps it, in a sense, evergreen. You know, that there's new stuff coming out to keep people involved and keep people connected. And then, of course, there's the community that's around this franchise that is unlike any other franchise fan community that I've seen. You know, going to Comic-Con, I see all these different groups of franchise fans, and I never feel more at home at a convention than when I'm at a Star Wars celebration, even if I've never been to, you know, the Orlando, you know, Orange County Convention Center or the Anaheim Convention Center before. It just feels so much more at home than, say, you know, my fourth time going to Phoenix Comic Con. You know, it's just, there's so many factors that, you know, go into this, that if it was easy to answer that question, everybody would be doing it. So it's just a modern myth and miracle all at the same time, in my opinion. So shall we move on to the next question?
Yeah, let's do it. That is a great question, Neil. And I think, again, it's...
Yeah.
That's something, you know, if you're listening right now, I think that's a great question for you to even just reflect on, is, you know, just making it even personal to yourself. Why do I still love Star Wars? You know, I would say, at least for you and I, Jason, and every Star Wars fan I know, so I don't want to say every Star Wars fan, but at least every Star Wars fan I know kind of grew up with it. So why is it, you know, you went from playing with action figures when you were like 8, 9, 10 years old to still being in love with it now, you know, as young adults or as 40 or 50 year old adults, or now you have kids, right? Like, think of it, think of your own answer, because that's the answer. If you think about it, right?
Like, right.
Nobody has the right answer. There is no single answer. But I think, you know, when I just responded to that question, I was saying why I still love it. This is why it endures for me. It will forever endure for me. And I think if you're able to ask that question for yourself, that's the answer to that question.
Yeah.
So
it's a good point. It's a very good point. Everyone's got their own reason, and it's all valid and it's all correct. Mm-hmm. Which is partly why it's so hard to come up with sort of a general overarching reason.
Yeah.
So, yeah. All right. Joey Letson writes in and says, who's your favorite Animaniac? Whoops, wrong podcast. funny, Joey, because he's got the Animaniacast. Part of the RetroZap.com podcast network. There you go, Joey. There's a plug for you. He says, okay, what does the title Return of the Jedi refer to as the Return of the Jedi as an order or group? Or do you think it returns to the return of return of Anakin? As a kid, I always thought it was referring to the group of Jedi, but now I think it might be just one Jedi, Anakin.
I think it refers to the group and the order, because it's the Jedi. It's not Return of a Jedi. It's Return of the Jedi. You know, that giving it that that title, the Jedi, you know, is that called like a, I'm not good at English language, but what is the considered? Is it like a predicate or? I don't know that stuff. Crap. But, you know, the fact that it's, to me, the there is a plural the. And while, and again, this is, Star Wars is always doing this in the sense of it, there's a, especially the original trilogy, it's, the prequels does it pretty well, actually, too. It's a microcosm story that has a macro impact. You know, mm-hmm. The story of Luke Skywalker in the original trilogy is this young man who struggles through to become the first of a new Jedi Order. And that struggle is mirrored in the struggle of the Rebel Alliance. And his victory also means the victory of the Alliance at large. The story of Anakin in the prequels, it's the story of this one man who is the chosen one. But he falls from grace because he's deluded by the dark side. The entire Republic is deluded by the dark side in Chancellor Palpatine. So again, mm-hmm. There's these macro stories that have, you know, they're the micro story that has a macro effect. Again, it's so biblical. That's why I love Star Wars too. the Bible's always doing that. We get the story of an individual person, but their story is meant to be representative of like the whole nation of Israel or all the Christian people. And that's so true in Star Wars. And I think it could actually be both and, you know, when I study theology, that was always an answer in some of the bigger theological questions. It's like, well, is it this or this? And my professor would always be like, well, it's both and. It's like, okay, great. I think that actually, you know, I think it's both and here. It's both the Jedi Order because of Anakin, but also it's also referring to Luke. I don't think it's just it's both and. It's both because Anakin returns as a Jedi. And because mm-hmm. of that, he paves the way by eradicating the Sith for Luke to be the new Jedi Order. Mm-hmm. So it's both and, in my opinion.
Yes. I agree. You're right. It is one of those great things where it's the microcosm affects the macrocosm. And even the title works to include both, you know, in this sense. Mm-hmm. Because it is both the return of the Jedi as an order in Luke, you know, assuming his role and his identity as a Jedi, like his father before him. And he mentions that specifically because it's also the return of Anakin Skywalker, Jedi Knight. You know, I feel like it, especially in light of, you know, the saga as a whole now, it has to be both. I think perhaps originally in 83, it might have been just the Jedi as in the Jedi Order making a return to the galaxy. But in spite of, you know, through everything that we've gotten with the prequels and the Clone Wars now, I feel like that has to expand to include the Jedi Anakin Skywalker as well, the chosen one. So yeah, you, for so many reasons that you already said, Carl, I'm going to agree that it's both. So
yeah. That's a really good question, Joey. Thanks for bringing that to the table. And again, that's what I love about Star Wars. It's just its ability to, you know, to do that. You know, tell those. Even not just being biblical. That's old mythology. You know,
yeah.
Mythology was always the story of a person or a few people, and their story was indicative of, you know, the culture at large. I mean, that's what the Mesopotamians did. It's what the Egyptians did. It's what all ancient cultures did.
Yeah.
You know, that's timeless storytelling. So,
yeah.
But yeah, awesome question, Joey. Thank you. We just have a couple left, Jason. We're actually gonna do this. I'm so happy.
We're gonna get through all of them. Haven't done this in forever.
I know it. So our next question comes from Theron Allman. He says, "Hi, Carl and Jason. I have a big question. If you had to choose between a phase 1 clone troopers and phase 3 stormtroopers, which do you think would win in a fair fight?"
Phase 3 stormtroopers. That's the OT stormtroopers, I believe. Right? Yes.
I'm going to go with yes because okay. I don't actually know. I'm going to assume yes. So let that be our information moving forward.
Okay. Clone troopers.
Yeah.
Without a doubt. They're just better trained. They work better together as a team. They're clones of Jango Fett. They're just better. So clone troopers, no doubt.
Yeah, I'm complete agreement. They're not just random conscripts or recruits. They were bred and created for war.
Yeah.
So, yeah, definitely. I love phase 1 clone troopers, too. Those are my favorite looking ones, too.
They're pretty awesome.
Yeah, those helmets are so cool.
I've got a 12-inch Commander Cody, and he's got interchangeable helmets for...
Oh, nice.
And I've got him as the phase 2. So, you know, because nice. That's my favorite. Anyway. Dave Laidlaw says, "If you could have only one Jedi or Sith power, what would it be? Honorable mentions allowed." Good.
Good. Yeah, well, good then, because I have two honorable mentions. and horrible evil one would be Mind Probe. I love Kylo Ren's ability to do that. Just see inside somebody's mind, you know, especially when I'm like really struggling to understand somebody, I can just go into their head. So I would use it for compassionate reasons, you know, you know, if like my girlfriend's mad at me or something, I just don't get it. I can just mind probe her and be like, oh, I get it. So but now she's just mad at me for violating her mind. But,
right. Exactly.
But that would be one. I think another would be force persuasion, which is also similar, right? You know, you don't want to make me work today. you know, that would probably be my go-to one. Man, I'm lazy. But the one I would like most is force pull. Because I hate getting up off the couch for stuff all the time. So, and I would do it to my cat, like Embo. I'd be like, "Embo, you're not sitting in that chair. You're coming over here." So, yeah, exactly. So that would probably be mine. What about you?
Oh, man. I like that the telekinesis, the push-pull stuff, because that's just fun. Jedi mind tricks, I think, would be fun as well. But there's a little bit of Sith in me that I'd like the lightning, too. So.
Yeah, that'd be fun.
Zap! You know. I'd also be able to generate my own electricity, so yeah, that's helpful. Save money.
Yeah.
I think that's my favorites.
So we have one last question, which comes to us from our buddy Jackson. He says, "I have a question for your Thanksgiving episode. Do you guys think that the Star Wars Battlefront Rogue One Scarif DLC will spoil anything for the movie?"
It is coming out like 10 days before Rogue One. Right. So there is that. I don't think so. Particularly because there's not really much of a story element in Battlefront the way it's set up right now. We're going to get Jin and Commander and Director Krennic as new heroes. we'll see some of the new Rogue One troopers, but we've already seen a lot of those in the trailers anyway. So maybe we'll get to see some of the layout of, you know, Scarif in the movie, but, you know, the maps are never exactly what we have in the films anyways, so I don't think so. What about you, Carl?
Oh, I think it's going to spoil the whole movie.
Okay.
I'm just kidding. No, yeah, I don't think it's going to spoil anything at all, because everything we're going to see in that we've already seen. We've seen Scarif. We've seen all these characters. We've seen the, you know, the shore troopers. We've seen the death troopers. And that's all you're going to see. You're just going to see stuff that we've already seen. You're, you know, Battlefront isn't it's not a plot story. So
right. And we've seen a bunch of the, you know, those battle shots from Scarif. So, you know, we know there's a huge battle taking place. We know that there's, you know, U-wings swooping in, you know, dropping off rebel troopers. We've seen the big AT-ACTs out there. You know, we've seen all that stuff. You're right. I don't think it's going to spoil much at all. So,
yeah. So, but thanks Jackson for the question. And thank you all of you Larians for your questions, because those were a lot of really fun questions to talk about.
Yes.
So yeah, you know, I love when we get the opportunity to do these episodes where you guys get to write in your questions, because you always have so many good ones. Mm-hmm. And like Jason, you just kind of alluded to, we never get through them all. So I'm very happy about this.
Yeah, I know. Which just means that we can say, hey, now you guys can ask more questions again, and we'll just fill it right back up.
Yeah, exactly. Jason, before we wrap this up, just a couple of things announcements I want to go over to remind everybody about. The first of which is we are doing a charity donation for the Christmas season this year. We're signed up for it's a charity here in Boston, because again, it's where I live, so I want to be able to physically do this. And what we're doing is we've essentially we're sponsoring a child here in the city who, you know, has a low income family, won't have much of a Christmas without our help. So he has a Christmas list of Star Wars items, which of course is why I picked it. Essentially what we're going to do is we're going to buy that Christmas list of his and, wrap it. Well, actually, they don't want you to wrap things, but I'm going to bag it all up and take it over to the agency and, help this little boy. His name's Harry. He's 8 years old. We're going to help him have a really fun Star Wars filled Christmas. And the way we're asking you guys to help out with this is, even if you don't have any interest in pledging to Patreon ever, but you really want to help with this charity, we're asking that you just pledge $1 for the month of December. It's just a monthly charge. So, and we're going to take all the donations that we've gotten for this first month of Patreon to buy all these gifts for little Harry. And right now we're doing pretty well. We've got 10 folks helping out with this. We'd love to get a few more. Obviously, some of these things. It's not a huge work order, but it's a good amount of money, and I'm happy to throw in any of my own that needs to be supplemented. But we really wanted to give you guys an opportunity to help with this as well. And it's the holiday season; it's a great time to give back. And obviously, I know probably so many of you do wonderful things in your own life and in your own spare time. But again, we've been doing the show for 5 years. We really want to try to find more ways of engaging both our listenership, but even community at large. And I think this is a nice way. You know, we're signed up as the Wampa's Lair. So he'll get write in a little note to tell the family, you know, this is coming from some Star Wars fans who listen to a podcast, you know, and just show that, you know, we want to make even if it's a small difference in the world. So again, if that's something you're interested in helping with, you know, you can go over to patreon.com/Wampa's Lair podcast. And on the right-hand side of the page, you'll see, you know, pledge $1. And that's all you do is you put in a dollar. If you don't want to continue pledging after the month of December, you can easily just withdraw from the page. It's real easy to do. Even if you want to withdraw and you're having trouble, you can just shoot us a note. We'll help you with that. And as our thank you to you for helping with this charity is we are going to be doing for the week before Rogue One, we're going to do, again, kind of what we did for Force Awakens, these mini episodes. They'll probably last between 15 and 20 minutes. maybe a little longer, maybe a little shorter, depending on the topic. We do have a bunch of topics picked, though, and they're all really fun. And so as our thank you to you for both just being awesome Larians, helping with this charity, and as well as just, hell, building up to Rogue One, you're going to get access to those Rogue One mini episodes. So the charity, the donation is due by December 11th. So again, we encourage you, if you want help with this, to please do this sooner rather than later, so that we can go ahead and get out and fill that Christmas list. I will certainly send pictures of what we get so that you guys can all see it. So yeah, we would really appreciate that support. Certainly, last but not least, next week is going to be our Shadows of the Empire anniversary episode. So this is the December 20th of this month is the 20th year anniversary of Shadows of the Empire, which is one of my certainly favorite old Legends novels. And, you know, it's also a video game, a comic book, and toys, and all this and that. It's the movie that wasn't a movie, is what they titled it in their advertising campaign. So definitely join us next week for that episode. Jason's sitting that one out simply because I've got two friends who really want in on it, and Jason didn't have the time to reread Shadows, which is certainly fine.
Yeah, no, it's been at least over 5 years since I've read it, and I've forgotten most of it, and yeah. So I'm going to sit that one out.
So Joe Hogan will be joining us because Joe is a huge fan of Shadows. And then my friend Greg, who was actually on, I think, the second episode of Tales of the Larians. So the three of us are going to be just kind of talking about the novel at large, the soundtrack, the toys, the comic book, the video game. It's all getting thrown in there. So it's going to be a lot of fun. Because of some scheduling difficulty, again, we normally are trying to release our episodes on Thursday, but we're recording very late Thursday night next week, so it probably won't be out until next Friday, but that will be coming out next week. So that is... I know we have a lot of listeners who also share our love of Shadows, so certainly be looking forward to that.
Yes, and since next week I will not be present, we are going to introduce a new poll, but the results of that poll will be gathered for the, not next episode, but the episode after that, the episode after Shadows of the Empire. So,
yes,
just so you are aware.
Right. And that poll, of course, is, Jason?
We want to know what your favorite scene from Return of the Jedi is. And I'm going to have a very difficult time because I can't just say the movie.
No, you can't, Jason.
Can I just add a vote to all of them? Oh, man. So I'm going to need these 2 weeks to come up with an answer for that. So that's going to be our new poll. We'll post it on social media at least, somewhere around the release of the Shadows of the Empire episode. That way everyone can respond there. And Carl, if they want to weigh in on the poll, if they want to comment on anything Shadows of the Empire related, or, you know, send us any more questions, where can they do that?
Well, you can do it over on Facebook, facebook.com/wampaslairpodcast. Follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/wampaslair. You can always send us emails at wampaslairpodcast@gmail.com. And certainly last but not least is our Patreon page, patreon.com/wampaslairpodcast.
All right. Well, I think that's going to wrap up this episode, this very festive episode.
Yes, and I almost forgot, before we do wrap it up, I just want to wish all of you and your families a very happy Thanksgiving, and we hope you enjoy your turkey and Wampa burgers and Tauntaun steaks.
Yes, and for those of you outside the United States listening, have a happy Thursday, and just celebrate along with us, because, you know, we want to share our Thanksgiving with you with this episode. Well, that'll wrap up this episode of the Wampa's Lair podcast. This has been episode number 207. Thank the Larians. For Carl, I'm Jason, and we will see you next time, or at least Carl will, here in the Wampa's Lair.